Eli Estrada of Long Beach had a lot of credit card debt, not to mention the cost of his upcoming wedding. He had a struggling landscaping business, and when he stumbled on, a bag filled with $144,000 in cash, you know, the thought occurred to him that his money problems might be over with. And he said that was his first reaction. You know, this will take care, this is God sent, this will take care of my money problems. But then he realized that maybe that wasn't right. It was just a first reaction. You know, it's not mine, it belongs to someone else. He started feeling real nervous about that. He said he started feeling like he'd done something wrong by picking up the money and keeping it. He ended up turning the money back over to the police. They came to his landscaping company and got the money back. And the money had been lost by Brinks drivers, armored truck drivers. And somehow it ended up in the street where he had noticed it on his way to work. And despite his debt and also the cost and for caring for his mother, who moved in with him after losing her home, in spite of getting nasty remarks from the neighbors, some of his neighbors and friends for wanting to give the money back, Eli knew that it was the right thing to do and turned the money back in. He did the right thing. He did the godly thing. And brethren, our challenge in being called in this age is to live godly in a world governed by Satan, a world that is going in a different direction. Let's look in Revelation chapter 18. We have some advice given here, maybe a warning given here in Revelation 18. So if you turn to Revelation 18, and we'll begin here in verse 4. Revelation 18, verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people." You know, come out of her, my people. Do not be a part of her plagues and or her sins. You know, think about it. To come out of something, you've got to be in something already. And to recognize, you know, where we are, that we're in something and we need to get out. And that, you know, brethren, this is our challenge. This is our challenge today, is to come out of this world, you know, to come out of this culture, to come out of this system that we find ourselves in. This system that is diametrically opposite to what all that God holds true, all that God holds true, near and dear, all that He teaches throughout the Bible. You know, there's a contrast between two different ways. We've seen it from the beginning. You know, we saw two trees, two ways of life, two systems described by two cities. And what's more important to understand is that each of these two ways brings us to different outcomes, to a different ending at the end of the book. Two different outcomes. You know, what we want to picture is two different cities. One is identified as Babylon, and the other one is identified as Jerusalem above. And we know the head of this Babylonian system is Satan, and all that Satan represents, all the culture that he has put off on this world. A lot of times it's very tempting, it's enticing, it appeals to our human nature. So our job is to look beyond what Satan offers to the end of the book, and embrace our citizenship in the heavenly Jerusalem. So our challenge is given in Revelation 18:4. Come out of this world. And brethren, to get an idea of how to do this, we can go back and look at a biblical example, a man trying to live a godly life, right in the middle of a very ungodly society, Babylon. You know, the Bible likens Babylon to Satan's way of government. Today we're going to look at the example of Daniel. Daniel was the ultimate spiritual survivor in the kingdom of the beast. Daniel was in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel was the ultimate spiritual warrior and survivor in the kingdom of Satan. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was identified as the head of gold in Daniel 2. But Daniel was a man of God in the midst of this ungodly society. So what did Daniel do? What didn't Daniel do? And what did God do for Daniel? The question might ask, well, what does that have to do with us? You know, what do we have in common with Daniel? Let's go to John chapter 17. And what we find in John 17 is some of Christ's last earthly instructions to his disciples. And what we find also is these instructions are not only given to the disciples at that time, but down to the disciples down to the end of the age. John 17, verse 14. John 17, verse 14. And here John writes, quoting Christ, "I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they were not of the world, just as I'm not of the world." And notice what Jesus said in verse 15. "I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth." Notice, your word is truth. So now Jesus purposely, you know, keeps us as his disciples in this world. You know, he doesn't send us off to a cave somewhere to escape this world. He keeps us in this world, in Satan's world. But we have our citizenship in that heavenly, that other city, the heavenly Jerusalem, not in Babylon. It's interesting, you know, we're not taken out of this world, literally. And being citizens of Jerusalem above, we are culturally, we're to spiritually come out of this world, out of this system. A system that's directly opposite to God. So the question is, how do we do this? How can we be godly in a system that is called Babylon? And this is what we can learn from the lessons of Daniel. Lesson number one. He was godly in the kingdom of the beast by holding on to godly values. Holding on to godly values. Let's turn to Daniel. Let's notice a few things that are going on with Daniel. And what we find here at this point in Daniel's life, he's a captive in Babylon, and the Babylonians are messing with Daniel's head. They're actually trying to brainwash Daniel. They're trying to disorient him. They're trying to indoctrinate him in the Babylonian system. That's what we find here. And they'd learned over the years, with all the captives that the Babylonians had taken, they would indoctrinate by peeling away one layer at a time, like peeling an onion. Change the person by taking off one layer at a time. Until they got to the core of the person, like the onion, in most cases, for most human beings, by the time they got to the point, there was nothing left. In most cases, this was the case. But Daniel and his friends, they found something different. They found something different as they peeled deeper and deeper. They found the core was harder and harder. Because Daniel and his friends, what they had the true God at the core, at their innermost being. The Babylonians tried to first change his loyalty. Let's look at Daniel chapter 1, verse 6. One of the first things they did was they changed his name. They changed his name. It says the officials gave Daniel and his friends new names. The name they gave Daniel was Belshazzar. Belshazzar. And it's interesting, the Hebrew word Daniel means God is my judge. God is foremost in my life. God is my judge. And they changed his name to Belshazzar, which interesting means Baal, protector of life. Notice even they tried to change his loyalty even in the name. From God being first in their life to Baal. So they were just by the church changing of the names, they were trying to change the loyalty from the true God to the God Baal. In verse 4, notice they tried to change his thinking. Verse 4 says he was given every kind of learning, education. They would teach him the language and the literature of the Babylonians. Notice what they're trying to do to his lifestyle in verse 8. They were trying to change his diet even. They were trying to change his diet. Daniel 1 verse 8. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the royal rations of food and wine. There was a threshold here that Daniel was not going to cross. And Daniel at that point resolved not to defile himself with that Babylonian diet at the time. And you know, resolve is a very strong word that an individual has backbone and he's able to stick to things, to a principle. So what's going on here? You know, this godly man in the courts of Babylon, he was being true to a lifelong determination of what was right. You know, Daniel could have said at this point, well, you know, what one little bite hurt here? You know, God will understand. You know, we know that we're confronted with these choices every day in our lives, being part of, still part of Satan's world. You know, as things come into our lives, as to whether or not we have a purpose, whether or not we have that resolve to stand up for something. You know, to stand up for what the Bible says, not to cross the line. You know, not to cross that line into the Babylonian world, which is all around us. You know, the head of that Babylonian system is not a man. It's Satan. And Satan would like to peel us just like an onion, like he did Peter. When Jesus said to Peter, you know, Peter, I've got news for you. Satan would like to sift you like so much wheat. And brethren, that story hasn't changed. It goes on and on and it goes on today. Satan is alive and he's well. So why didn't Daniel partake of what was on the table in front of him? We notice what occurs here in verse 12. We find that David offers a plea here. He offers a plea. And he says, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. Here we see Daniel was willing to negotiate what he could. Verse 15. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter and fleshed, and all the young men who ate the king's portion. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink, and gave them vegetables. As for these four men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. Notice they were indoctrinated by the Babylonian system. They tried to indoctrinate him with the Babylonian things. But God gave them knowledge and skill in all wisdom, godly wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them among them all, and none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times for every day, interesting year, than all the magicians, astrologers who were in the realm. The ones who had taken in the Babylonian knowledge, the wisdom, godly wisdom, was 10, he gave it a number of 10 times, but I'm sure it was even better than that. Thus Daniel continued in the first year of King Cyrus, even after Nebuchadnezzar was dead. So what do we learn about this? Why was it so important that Daniel did not eat the king's food? You know, obeying God's law is found in the Bible according to that. It goes back to Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy 14, let's begin in verse 1. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 2. Notice here what's stated. You are the children of God, of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves nor shave the front of your head for the dead. Now, he's not talking about getting a haircut here. He's talking about a religious ritual. And God says, we don't go there. This is one of the religious rituals of the Canaanites. And God says, don't go there. Don't be like this world. He called them the heathen around them. Verse 2, for you are a holy people. Notice this, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. And the Lord has chosen you to be a people for himself. So now we're moving to what might be called the covenant relationship. Notice, you are a special treasure above all the people who are on the face of the earth. You are near and dear to me. I am dear to you. Therefore, you shall not eat any detestable thing. And these are the animals you might eat. Now, that's like a loving parent talking to his children. He doesn't want to see his children hurt themselves. He's telling them, these foods I created for you, these are good for you. You know, when God offered, you know, these biblical food laws, they were introduced to Israel as a matter of identity, who God really was, who they were. And you know, every time they ate from that plate, they were mindful. They were mindful that they had been called out of Egypt. They had been called out of this world. We know Egypt is associated with sin. And the food in the Israelite mind was a matter of identity. You know, to break the food laws willfully was a matter of stomping on that identity. And what God was doing in their lives, having rescued them from Egypt. And still, and the same thing still goes on today, brethren. You know, God has rescued us out of modern Egypt. We do not eat the unclean food. That's simply because the Creator created it, and He knows best. It also becomes a matter of identity. It reminds us every time that we eat, you know, worship toward God cuts right across our lives, our daily activities. And we have to make choices. We have to make choices even on our plate. You know, we're saying to God, we are your people. You are our God. You are sovereign. You are first. And that's why it's so important to Daniel. They were trying to strip him of his identity. And Daniel was not going to go there. Daniel had a core from the inside out. Not from the inside. Not from the outside in. Excuse me. And as Nebuchadnezzar's servants, they did what they did with all the captives. They tried to strip away that identity. And Daniel held on to that. While we get to that, God came first in his life. He held that sovereignty of God. He held that to, as God as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And what was more important than any king asked of him on this earth, you know, it's not Daniel's challenge alone. You know, Daniel's time has come and gone. Brethren, this is our challenge. This is our challenge now. Excuse me. Cold, this dry weather sometimes gets in the voice. You know, that's our challenge now. And brethren, it's going to be our challenge in the future, even more so. We need to make sure that we know that our values cannot be stripped away. You know, stripped away like so many onion layers. But what we have at the core, we have to know is solid. And we have to know that God is at our core. You know, that we obey God's law. Revelation 14, you know, it specifically states a quality of the people of God in the future. The people that God is going to work with. That He's going to have His covenant with. That covenant relationship. Revelation chapter 14, verse 12. Revelation chapter 14, verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Notice this. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. What he's saying in the future, as now, there's going to be an elect. At that time only, there's going to be a remnant people. At that time, when the resurrection of the Babylonian Empire comes up for the final resurrection, we know clearly and plainly what's going to be happening. They're going to be keeping, there's going to be a remnant keeping the commandments of God. And having the testimony of Jesus Christ. And we recognize that these people are going to have tremendous faith. So never underestimate, brethren, our present training. The training that God is giving us at this point. That training for a witness tomorrow. You know, we are citizens of Jerusalem above. You know, we're to come out of this world by what we do, by holding on to godly values. Which brings us to number two. Excuse me. Daniel was godly in the kingdom of Babylon by how he handled revealed truth. He was godly in the kingdom of the beast by how he handled godly revealed truth. Revealed truth. Let's go back to the story for a minute here. In Daniel 2, verse 1, Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and the spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, astrologers, the sorcerers. And down in verse 3 it says, I've had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. You know, when the king calls upon you in the middle of the night, what's the best thing that maybe you could say in being coming out of sleep? O king, live forever. No matter what he asks. And they thought maybe that would satisfy the king. But notice in verse 4, tell your servants the dream, and we will give you the interpretation. The reason he's king, he's probably pretty smart here. He wasn't going to tell them the dream. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut to pieces, and your houses shall be made ash heaps. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and the interpretation. And this point is simply this. The men came in the middle of the night, and they not only had to tell the king what the dream was, what the king had dreamed, but also the interpretation. You know, they probably could have made up an interpretation if they knew what the dream was. There's one thing to be told, you know, to interpret the dream. But what these men had to do, they had to tell the king what he dreamed. Exactly. So the men came back, tried to stall, verse 8. And the king says, I know for certain that you would gain time. But the king wanted an answer. Notice verse 10. And what they said here. They said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods. Notice that, except the gods, whose dwelling is not with the flesh. You know, they did not recognize that God can live within a human being for those that God has chosen. You know, what does it say in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9? As we heard in the sermonette, I'll go back over it again. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. But as it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the hearts of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. You know, brethren, by and large, this world is cut off from God. But you know, when we give ourselves to God, and we proclaim God as being first in our lives, as being sovereign in our lives, our King, our Lord, our friend, our Father, he's going to do things for us. He's going to do things as a loving father for his children. Not just prophets, not just kings, but for all of his children, whatever the names are. Notice what happens. Verse 14, Daniel. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the king of the king's, captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. Now just think about this. Daniel had just gotten a promotion over the dinner plate thing, with the wisdom he's shown with the unclean food. Then the king has this dream. He's ready to wipe out the entire department, including Daniel. And Daniel could, at this point, said, you know, wait a minute. What's going on here, God? Why would you lead me here and pull the carpet out from under me? But notice what Daniel says in verse 15. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree from the king so urgent? And Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time. They might tell the king its interpretation. Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they were to seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning the secrets, so Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men from Babylon. Daniel asked for time. You know, he didn't ask to save himself. He asked for time that he might come up with an interpretation. He paused. He took time out. 1 Peter 3. In 1 Peter 3, verse 15, always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you, with meekness and fear. Brethren, you know, when God is sovereign, when God is first in our lives, and we're working for God rather than working for ourselves, you know, we're going to approach everything with a different mindset. Another thing he did godly in the kingdom of the beast, notice what he did. He went and talked to his friends. He sought counsel. You know, when we have situations cross our lives, you know, do we get together with people we really respect? People that have wisdom, and that we draw upon that wisdom, draw upon that experience. And after we do that, do we ask them to pray? And notice what occurs during the night. The mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Verse 19. Notice what happened after it was revealed in a vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever. For wisdom and might are his, and he changes times and the season. He removes kings and raises up kings. And goes on in verse 23. Notice what he said. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. Notice what Daniel did. He prayed, he asked God for something. He returned, he was grateful, he was thankful. And you know, this is a powerful principle, brethren, about being godly in the kingdoms of Satan, of being godly in today's world. Is a thankful person. A thankful person. A thankful person is a growing person. Because, brethren, it takes a certain humility. It takes a certain humility to be a thankful person. You know, Daniel knew exactly where he stood. He was a slave in Babylon. He knew God was his king. He knew he was God's bondservant. And whatever situation he was in, he was dependent. He knew he was dependent on God. He was God's bondservant. And whatever situation he was in, he was to do it to the glory of God. And God knew exactly, he knew exactly what Daniel was going through in the situations that came up in Daniel's lives. Brother, he knows what situations are in our lives. And you know, he wants to know what his disciples are going to do in those situations. Look back at the disciples in Christ's time. You know, remember when the disciples were up on the hill? The story of the little boy with the bread and the fish. You know, Jesus already knew what was going to occur there. But he wanted to know what his disciples were going to do. Remember, the disciples said, you know, there's too big of a crowd here. There's too many people. Feeding these people, it's too big of a challenge. Hey, there's not enough bakeries down there in the town to feed this crowd. You know, Christ, what have you gotten yourself into? In turn, what have you gotten us into? There's only 13 of us, 5,000 of them. And that little boy came up. You know, that little boy didn't have a whole lot. In fact, he had only a little. But brethren, when you give God a little, with that little, he can make it a lot. You know, Daniel prayed to God. Then most importantly, he came back and he was grateful. You know, when we go to God and ask him to intervene in our lives, to walk with us as our partner, and we go out and we see our prayers answered, are we just as quick to get back on our knees again and give God thanks? You know, we've got to be ready for everything that comes our way. So when things come our way, we have to have God at our core. You know, Daniel was a spiritual survivor in the court of Babylon. He's right in the center of Satan's world, and he knew how to handle God's truth. Let's go to the third step. Point number three, and then we'll conclude. Point number three is simply this. He was close to God. Point number three, being close to God. So far, we've come to see point number one. It was to hold on to godly values. You know, he had the ability to obey God's law. And number two, he's able to handle godly truth in the right way. You know, he had the ability to hear God and understand God's revelation. We also see that Daniel was obedient. Daniel was obedient. He was patient. He was bold. You know, he's seemingly able to do the right things at the right time. And now we come to the last step, being close to God. And you know, all the things that Daniel was not because he was a great human being. He was not of himself a great human being. But it was because God was first in his life. God had sovereignty in his life. At this point, maybe a simple note of encouragement, a lesson that we learned from the gospel. Then we'll relate it to Daniel. And then we're going to relate it to us. Simply put, Christ never taught his disciples how to preach. He never taught them how to preach. But what did he do? He taught them how to pray. He set the example in Matthew 6 and said, "And when you pray." And that leads us to the last story of Daniel. He understood the importance of that connection to God. That connection to God that only comes through prayer. Daniel's ultimate values moved beyond simply what he did, what he knew, and how he could tell it. Frankly, it moved beyond the rules. It moved beyond revelation. It moved to what? It moved to the ruler himself. It moved to God. He realized that while the rules were godly and the revelation was indeed godly, often by itself, those things had no value, no lasting value, unless we have that connection to God. Now his rivals tried to strike at him, and we pick up the story in chapter 6. Chapter 6, we find that the Babylonian Empire is gone at this time. We now have the Persian Empire set up. But we find that Daniel, in spite of all the change in government, Daniel is still part of that government. Daniel survived and became part of the Persian government. In verse 4, the administration at this point tried to get to Daniel. You know, this world recognizes the things of God and they hate it. They tried to get to Daniel because they could see God in Daniel. Daniel 6, verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could not find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of God, of his God." So what they did, they set up this edict. They tricked the king into making this ruling to have everybody worship the king for 30 days. Now notice in the middle of verse 7, to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now here's Daniel, he's in Persia in the city of Babylon, which is part of the Persian Empire at this point. And this decree goes out. Let's put ourselves in Daniel's shoes at this point. You know that if we pray to anybody other than the king, it's over for us. It's done. And you know, humanly thinking, we might say, you know, I've chalked up a lot of prayer time over the years. You know, God understands everything that I've done before this time. I mean, there was a day back there I prayed almost for 2 hours and couldn't stop. So maybe I can move that extra prayer time into the next 30 days and God will understand. You know, if I don't talk to him for 30 days, you know, I got all this credit behind me. I can move into this time. But brethren, that wasn't Daniel's mindset. Notice what happened in verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room and his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as is custom since early days. Daniel knew this decree had already gone out, and he knew what the ramifications were going to be. He knew what might happen to him. He knew what might happen to him if he got down on his knees, prayed, faced Jerusalem, opened those windows. But brethren, to Daniel, his prayer was more important than anything else, because God was sovereign in his life. God was first. His prayer to him was more important than his own life. To him, without prayer, his life was worthless. You know, without God being within him, speaking to him, communicating with him, that oneness. For Daniel, being without prayer was worse than death. Think about it. How are we going to be in the years ahead? Our children, maybe our grandchildren. Are they going to be survivors? Are they going to be godly? Are they going to be godly in the kingdom of the beast when it comes, brethren? You know, we're going to have to be what is called prayer warriors. We're going to have to be talking to God. You know, Daniel, when everybody else was shaking and quaking, knowing that the lion's den was there, he felt it was more important to have that contact with God than the fear of what men could do. Verse 13. So they answered and said before the king that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but does his petition three times a day. Verse 16. So they had the king trapped at this point in his own decree. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him to the den of lions. Notice this. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid at the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signets of his lord, that the purpose concerning Daniel may not be changed. You know, it's interesting here that Daniel represents a type of Christ. Daniel knew what lay before him, and he went ahead and did it anyway. Like Christ, the stone was brought to seal the tomb. Verse 18. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of the lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, so they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. You know, Daniel, being a form of Christ, Daniel was put in the place of darkness, and the stone was rolled back. You know, he's thought to be dead. And that would be assumed with the hungry lions. The stone was sealed. And when he came out of the lion's den, a type portraying in a sense what would happen to Christ, the ultimate godly man. Brethren, you and I have the same ability and the same education to walk through the same two doors as Daniel did. Two doors that every Christian has to walk through is, number one, the door of availability, and number two, the door of willingness. Have we been available for God to use today? Are we willing? You know, when he calls upon us, you know, we can have all the talents, we can have all the brains, we can have all the wealth, we can have all the good looks, we can have all of that. But if we don't walk through the door of availability, if we're not available for God to use us, if we're not willing to walk through the door of willingness, and say, God, you're my sovereign. You're first in my life. I've given my life to you. I love you. If you love me, I'm yours, you're mine. And I know that you'll never take me to a place where the stone is too heavy to roll away. You know, Daniel was there. That's why Daniel was a survivor in the kingdom of the beast. That's why he was a godly man in a very ungodly world. That is why you and I can be godly men and women in an ungodly world. You know, today we went over 3 points. 3 points of being godly in Satan's world. Holding on to godly values. Being able to recognize revealed truth. 3, being close to God. You know, 3 separate points. 3 separate points. But they're all tied together. They're all tied together by one common thread. And what these 3 points have in common is simply this: the sovereignty of God. Each of these points points us to God being first in our lives. In the life of one man of God that allowed him to be godly in a very ungodly world. You know, brethren, the steps are there. The choice is ours. 2 trees, 2 ways, 2 cities, 2 separate outcomes, and 1 decision that can be only ours. And that decision simply being this: will we allow God to be sovereign in our lives? Will we allow God to be first in our lives? Mm-hmm.